From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Margaret Kimberly is a columnist with BlackAgendaReport.com who has a weekly column there called Freedom Rider. She's also featured here weekly. This week, her column is entitled Fighting for Southern Human Rights. Margaret attended the Southern Human Rights Organizers Conference in Jackson, Mississippi. It was their 20th annual convention. The conference was dedicated to the late Chokwe Lumumba, the mayor of Jackson and a force behind Cooperation Jackson, an effort to free majority black cities from decades of corrupt and ineffectual leadership. We spoke with Margaret via Skype from New York Thursday.
I attended the Southern Human Rights Organizers Conference, SHROC, their 20th anniversary. And as the name says, it is a group of people from the southern states involved in various human rights activities, some union organizers, various activists. This meeting took place in Jackson, Mississippi, and was dedicated to the memory of the late Mayor Chokwe Lumumba, who was first an attorney who, and then ran and won a seat as mayor of Jackson and sadly died about a year afterwards. But he was a movement person. He started an effort. It was called, he and others, called Cooperation Jackson. And it was an effort to do something different for Jackson is almost 80% black. It has one of the largest concentrations of African Americans of any American city. Mississippi is a poor state, deliberately so. The legacy of slavery and Jim Crow makes it a very right-wing state. A so-called right-to-work state, difficult for people to organize union, very low levels of public spending.
And they brag about it, right? This is something that they brag about, advertising the state.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things we did, there was an action at a Nissan plant in Canton, Mississippi, which is near Jackson. The state of Mississippi gave Nissan, it's actually Renault Nissan. I did not realize that it was French and Japanese capital involved here. But at any rate, the plant opened in 2003, I believe, and with huge amounts of public money, this state that is so stingy with people and meeting human needs gives corporations these great subsidies. So Mississippi competed with other southern states. And these, by the way, these foreign automakers, they don't consider any other part of the country.
Right.
They obviously want to be in the South where it's difficult to unionize and where wages are low.
Right.
And so the state of Mississippi has given Renault-Nissan conglomerate more than $1 billion. It's a very poor state. 4,000 workers. 80% of them black. Now they are not even hiring full-time employees. They use a temporary firm, Kelly Temporary Services, to hire workers who obviously make even less.
Right.
And they top out at about $45,000 a year, those full-time workers, which, you know, for a place with a low cost of living is a decent living wage, but they have many complaints, workplace safety issues, the inability to form a union. A worker died on the line last year. So these are the things that that we were discussing at SHROC. I was on a panel and that included Ajamu Baraka, who was the Green Party vice presidential candidate. And we both talked about, wove in the issue of the presidential election as we talked about liberation in general. And it's interesting, when I met these Nissan workers, I thought about card check. Remember card check that the Democrats were going to bring? The Employee Free Choice Act, I think, is, but it's popularly known as card check. And Obama and the Democrats campaigned in 2008 that they would pass this legislation and it would be very easy for workers to unionize just by signing a card, no complicated elections or anything. Of course, they never did it.
Right.
They used their Republicans as their excuse, but they never did it.
Right.
And to see these people, to meet, sometimes these things can be academic. That's why it's important, I think, to, when possible, to get out of wherever one lives and see other people so that you see that something is not academic. And to meet people, excuse me, who are suffering an injustice because of something that the Democratic Party, which markets itself as being this party that champions the rights of working people, to see that they are suffering in part because of the Democrats' treachery. And I'm thinking a lot about this now as there is this effort to delegitimize Trump's election and nobody wants to hear it. But these are the kinds of things that the Democrats do all the time. And but I don't really care if people don't want to hear it. It is the truth. It is a fact. They are complete phonies and people are on to their schemes and to in some way or other. And that is why Trump is the president-elect and why he got this narrow electoral college victory, because the Democrats don't produce for people who support them.
Yep. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You throw some numbers around. One of the things that I noticed is you said $1 billion subsidy. And 40,000 a year, I think it was. No, 4,000 employees, right? So that's,
yes.
That's $1 million for every four employees, or that's $250,000 per. And they're making, how much did you say they're making annually?
Yeah, they top out at 45,000.
Okay, so you got a $250,000 subsidy per person to pay them 45,000. In other words, several years of salary for each employee coming from the taxpayers. Why don't they just own, why doesn't the state just own the auto shop?
Well, that's a good question, but as I said,
you say that the heads will explode, happen. Though. Yeah, right. The heads will explode.
Exactly. Exactly. So, so that was it. Was important for those of us who gathered at the Schrock conference to meet people who are in this struggle, to talk with people from other states. I met people who are public employee, who are unionized public employees, but they don't have the right to collectively bargain, which means it's all pretty much a sham if right. you don't have the right to bargain right. Collectively. So we talked about the future, and I think it's especially important and to take part in these activities now, where I think ultimately, despite these last-minute efforts, I think Donald Trump will be the president. And we live in an interesting time. There is so much contradiction going on, where the Democrats, as usual, didn't even bother to count the votes. Now they're going over in overdrive about Russian hacking costing right. the election and yeah, congressional right. investigation.
Right.
When Al Gore had the election stolen, clearly stolen in 2000, in Florida, black people were denied the right to vote through these culling of voter lists. And he lost the state and thus lost the presidency. And Democrats just rolled over after the Supreme Court decision and said and did nothing. Right. Now you have a situation where Trump, they do the usual things. They culling voter lists and bad voting machines in black neighborhoods. It's the old-fashioned right. way. But it seems that Trump may have a more legitimate claim to have won. And now Democrats are talking about denying him the presidency or, having the Electoral College investigate.
Yeah.
And it's clear that what he's talking about is upending this neoliberal hegemony that the United States plans for the whole world, and the targeting Russia as a propaganda point, and seriously targeting Russia because it's the only country that won't knuckle under to the United States, that has the power to push back to some degree.
Right.
So we have these people fighting who aren't friends of ours. And by that, I mean the people at the Schrock conference I met who are helping workers in their struggle, helping people with a variety of human rights issues. These Democrats and Republicans are not our friend. And I think it's important before people protest a Republican president, protest Trump, protest some of the things he's talked about, the immigration and a Muslim registry. Obviously, those are things to be protested by anybody who's a human rights activist. But this is a very dangerous time. We would have to do that without any sort of connection with the Democratic Party, because as I pointed out, they their policies have led to people not being able to join unions. It's people like Bill Clinton who punished people who received public assistance. You don't even have the right to receive public assistance. And places like Mississippi are very ruthless. Right. You have to work in order to get food stamp benefits.
Yep.
I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff. So this is what the Democrats do. And any protest of Trump, any protest of his campaign platform has to be independent of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And black people have to be very, very serious. And people on the left have to be very, very serious about self-determination and not falling into the trap of supporting these people who have been so treacherous for so many years.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed, and it's blaring. Looking at the people calling for the protests in D.C. around the inauguration, you know, they raise a bunch of demands like the ones you just listed, which they should raise, you know, Islamophobia, racism, all of that. That should be always raised until the problem is solved. And first you raise it, then you demand it, then you organize to implement it, you force it, and then you have it finally. But the things that seem to be of paramount importance across the entire working class right now, one, jobs. Everybody needs them. Everybody mm-hmm. needs a job. And peace, because we're looking at, you know, up close, the possibility of war with Russia and China. And, mm-hmm. you know, Trump has taken positions on both of those things. And because of that, I think, they're absent from the list of demands that are being made by the supposed left at the inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
Unifying themes that have been used over and over, bread and peace and land, by the way, not mm-hmm. raised, these others raised. And it, to me, it tells something about the nature of the protests and really where they're likely to lead.
Yeah, I plan to be in Washington on January 20th, but I want to be very selective, frankly, about who I'm with. I'm wondering, what exactly am I protesting? Am I protesting because Trump won? Am I protesting his policies? And there's so many people who I just do not trust at all. For example, everyone, the word, as we've discussed many times, the word fascism is being thrown around mm-hmm. very loosely all this year. Well, there's fascism right here in New York City, and many of the people protesting Trump didn't say a word. Stop and frisk was what, if that's not fascism, I don't know what is. Under Mayor Bloomberg, nearly 1 million people were stopped by the police. Without cause, most of them black, to a lesser extent Latino, and nobody else. And many white liberals who are now wringing their hands about Trump didn't say anything
right.
or proved of it. So I'm skeptical, frankly, of the motives of many people involved in these actions. I would love to protest the Democratic Party. I'd love to go to the DNC and, you know, throw rotten tomatoes at their windows or something. But it's
let me know if you go. So, I'll ride over with you.
So you're right to point out these. I'm just going to call it his hypocrisy.
And you talk about fascism. You know, I spent the last week in Cuba when they were having the memorial services for Fidel Castro, and people from all over the world were there. And, you know, this is supposedly, according to the American narrative, a police state. And I saw police, and they have guns, but they're hidden. They've got this whole long rule. And we're talking like, you know, sidearms, like pistols, like the police have had here since they had police. And I come back to New York, and you've got not just the stop and frisk thing going on, that's still going on, they call it something else now, but you got all these guys with machine guns standing on corners and stuff. Like, they don't have anything like that in Cuba, and they didn't even have stuff like that in Germany, except in some key places.
Yes, I mean, the 9/11 was used to make us accept a police state. I remember when Bush was running that second time, and I don't know if you recall, there was a terror alert, it seemed like, every week.
Yep.
They were all phony. The press repeated them without any sort of pushback.
Yeah, 63 degrees today, sunny, and an orange alert. You know?
Yes, yes, it was. So if you're in any transportation hub like you know, Grand Central Station or Penn Station here in New York, you see these guys with these automatic weapons and in uniform, and we just sort of, you know, accepted them like some kind of background music.
Right.
And, you know, with the surveillance, and we are all under surveillance, lest we forget. Everybody in this country, every email, every phone call you make, the NSA has a record of. And that is fascism. So these... The Democratic Party has an argument about what kind of capitalism is going to win. That seems to be, I'm still trying to figure it out, but that is what I have concluded, whether it's going to be this international U.S. runs the world kind of capitalism, or Trump being more concerned with what happens here in just in the United States. So they are fighting, but I think it's a mistake to see one side as being our friend, because they are not.
Yeah, it's tough finding friends out there in this particular climate. What were some of the other things that were taken up down there while you were there?
There was a lot of talk about the movement, the liberation struggle, which Mississippi has always played such a key role in advancing issues that generally don't get talked about, like patriarchy and the fact that women can be erased from the history of the movement, and that many men who otherwise had made heroic took heroic action were themselves patriarchal and misogynistic, and the need for that to stop. The continuing effort to form workers' cooperatives there in Jackson to keep Cooperation Jackson alive. Mayor Lumumba appealed to and got and it's, you know, controversial because it's somewhat regressive, but a sales tax to improve the infrastructure of the city of Jackson. But these low tax states always have low services, so that was an effort to improve life for people there. So so we talked about workplace safety. The poultry production is big in Mississippi. Most of the workers, though, are Latino, many of them undocumented. Terrible working conditions in those plants as well. So it's a struggle to overcome all of the structural things that make Mississippi always ranks dead last. It's always last in anything good and first in anything bad, in any ranking of the 50 states. So they have a long haul ahead of them. But I witnessed a lot of people who are very serious, and it's a model for what we, those of us is still in the liberation struggle, should be talking about. And it's one of the ways to, as you know, for me, my rant is the getting rid of our dependence on the Democratic Party. But to meet people who are taking independent actions, independent of that structure that has entrapped us, is a model for what we should be doing. And by, as an aside, I just reminded myself of something. The one of the things that Nissan does to co-opt the black community is by co-opting the black ministers. And they regularly meet with ministers and do things like, I was told, like give them a discount on their car lease or something. And the ministers never speak to the needs of some of their own parishioners, by the way, who work in the Nissan plant, never raise the issues of workers' rights, safety violations, the need to unionize, nothing, none of it. So that is also something that we need to get rid of these, as we call them, the black misleaders, who may be ministers or may be politicians, who do nothing for us and who, in fact, take actions against our interests.
A lot of the problems facing people in Mississippi are faced by people elsewhere in the South, for example, Alabama, parts of Louisiana, and et cetera, et cetera. And also in the North, in Detroit, you know, run down a list of places. Did you see people from there, like, coming to Jackson to try to get a handle on what was happening there that, that were suggesting they might bring it back home?
Yes, I mean, myself and others from the rest of the country, and actually there was some international solidarity. The Venezuelan consul in New Orleans came up, Jesus Garcia, Chucho Garcia. Someone from Ukraine was there also.
No kidding.
So there was some, yes, some international representation as well. But their plight is everybody's plight. And it's easy to point to some part of the country, in this case, Mississippi, and say, oh, my God, that's, you know, that's really messed up and their situation is so horrible. But that's what they have in store for all of us. In Detroit, the banks pushed Detroit into bankruptcy, but they got paid first. So and the people in Detroit and other cities in Michigan have lost their citizenship rights with these emergency manager setups, which they voted against having, by the way.
Right.
And then the Republicans won because the Democrats don't pay attention to state legislatures and just did what they wanted to do. So we see this pattern across the country of this dependent on the dependence on the Democrats, who can be depended upon to do the wrong thing, generally, and the collusion of politics and big money that never serves the needs of the people. So I think their goal is for all of us to be living like people in Mississippi with low wages and then little protection.
Yeah, I mean, for example, people going there from Detroit, one of the things that they can see down there while they're there is their job being done by somebody working for half or a third of what they were getting. Just like if they came from where I live, there used to be a GM plant in North Tarrytown. That's long gone. And you got Edison, Ford, all of that stuff is gone down there.
Yes, yes, exactly. So, I mean, we see this race to the bottom. And first it goes to the southern states. Then it goes overseas. Trump has, it's unclear to me how many jobs have been saved at this Carrier plant in Indiana that is going to send many jobs to Mexico. But then other jobs are being taken over by automation. And this is, despite the particulars of this individual situation, it's something the Democrats never brought up, never. And people are criticizing Trump and saying, his intervention didn't really save jobs or the state is subsidizing. Well, that happens right here in New York also, where the state subsidizes businesses. The city of New York does it all the time. Huge, very wealthy multinational corporations are given tax breaks and all sorts of abatements to stay in New York. So right across the river in Jersey City, Goldman Sachs got land for nothing, just for nothing.
Right. Yep.
And so, I mean, it's huge. I mean, block of buildings, and it was just given to them with some protest. I'm not going to say without any protest, but the politicians were bought off, and they went along with it. So this is our fate, and that's the other thing to remember. One person's fate can be everybody's if these situations are not protested.
Margaret Kimberly, is a columnist with a weekly column at blackagendareport.com. This week's column, Freedom Rider, is entitled Fighting for Southern Human Rights. Margaret, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
In keeping with today's newscast's blackagendareport.com motif, we bring you Barr's Glenn Ford with this closing commentary.
Ever since passage of the Patriot Act in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, it's been a crime to provide material support to groups designated as terrorists by the U.S. State Department, including ISIS and Al-Qaeda and its Syrian affiliate, the Al-Nusra Front. As the law is interpreted, material support can mean providing almost any kind of service or assistance that a prosecutor believes might materially help the designated group, even attending a peace conference or representing a group member in court. Americans have done hard time in prison for being found in violation of this law. But at the same time, the United States has spent billions of dollars to arm, train, and protect whole armies of jihadist terrorists in Syria, Islamist fighters that collaborate in every possible way with Al-Qaeda and its offspring in the Al-Nusra Front and the Islamic State. In the words of Tulsi Gabbard, the Democratic Congresswoman from Hawaii, "This madness must end. The government must end this hypocrisy and abide by the same laws that apply to its citizens." Gabbard has introduced a bill to force the U.S. government to abide by its own laws, as well as international law, by making it specifically illegal for the U.S. to fund aid of any kind, not just to Al-Qaeda and ISIS, but to any other group that collaborates with them. In Syria, that means virtually all of the so-called moderate rebels that the U.S. and its allies have lavished billions of dollars on. Just as importantly, Gabbard's Stop Arming Terrorists Act would make it illegal for the United States to give aid to any nation that assists these terrorists. That means the United States would be compelled to cut off aid to Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and Israel, the biggest recipient of U.S. aid in the world, which openly brags about treating Al-Qaeda fighters in Israeli hospitals. The U.S. would also have to cut off all assistance to Britain, France, and most of the rest of NATO for their assistance to terrorists in Syria. Earlier this year, the Obama administration reneged on its agreement with Russia to draw up a list of the jihadist groups that Washington supports and to make sure they don't fight alongside Al-Qaeda. Gabbard's law would require that the Director of National Intelligence draw up a list of jihadi groups that are cooperating with Al-Qaeda and with ISIS, and update that list every 6 months to make sure that none of them get U.S. assistance. Gabbard models her bill on the 1980s Boland Amendment that halted U.S. aid to the Contra terrorists in Nicaragua. She was joined by two Republican and two Democratic co-sponsors, including Black California Congresswoman Barbara Lee. The bill is endorsed by the Progressive Democrats of America and the U.S. Peace Council, but don't expect it to get effective support from the Progressive Caucus in the U.S. Congress. Minnesota Black Congressman Keith Ellison is caucus co-chair and absolutely worthless to the cause of peace. He supported the war against Libya and the proxy war in Syria, which is why he stands a good chance of becoming head of the Democratic National Committee, where it's all war and anti-Russia all the time. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.